It's a brace for the 18-year-old and 3 points in the back for Chicago.
Federico Navarro weaving his way through, and it's in.
It falls for Shaqiri. The Swiss international back onto the score sheet, and he doubles the Fire's lead.
Fire, fire, fire.
A man on fire.
All right, folks, welcome into yet another edition of the Intercontinental Football Show. Not once, but twice this week. My goodness, are you guys lucky? And my goodness, the Fire are cooking right now. Another win, this time 3-0 over Club de Foot Montreal. One of those proverbial six-pointers, as we've been talking about, with both sides coming into the night on 26 points in ninth place in the Eastern Conference. And finishing the night, the Chicago Fire sitting, I don't want to say comfortably, but at least sitting inside of the playoff line. 7-7-8, 29 points. They're one off of DC. They're five off of Orlando, six off of Atlanta, up until sixth place. But for the time being, the Chicago Fire have won 4 out of 5. They finally scored their first goal outside of the penalty area, thanks to just a ridiculous banger from Shaqiri. Unreal set piece. Love that draw. Brian Gutierrez's first goal of the season. Marin Haile Selassie gets his first goal since late May. Two assists for Yordios Koutsias, abusing the right-hand side of the defense for Club de Foot Montreal. What a night at Soldier Field. Star Wars night, tornado warnings, delayed kickoff. Emmett just, his eyes went really wide. Emmett McConnell is with me as always, chairman of the non-existent board. I'm your host, Tyler Terrence.
Can't believe I missed Star Wars night.
There was there was a Star Wars night. I got a bobblehead. The whole thing. It was fun. I made a couple references. Just nothing crazy. Yeah, you got R2-D2 there. I've got like, it's a stormtrooper bobblehead. I didn't want to make the whole night a Star Wars pun show, but you know, like it was really difficult to not do it when Misael Rodriguez is making his debut as a 20-year-old. And obviously, as I'm tagging the call while he's coming out to the field, I mean, may the force be with him. You know, it's just sort of the easiest thing to do there. Big, big result. And it's funny. I just think about these things randomly because I'm a lunatic. But I was like in the shower before the game and I was thinking to myself and I was just like, you know something? I was like, the Fire need to punish someone. They need to just beat somebody convincingly in order to convince me that there's at least a chance that they can make the playoffs. Because, yeah, like we can sit here and talk about the fact that they're sitting in ninth place right now, but the fact still remains that there's no consistent number nine presence. Go back and look at every MLS Cup winning team. Go back and look at most playoff teams in the past 5 years, 10. You can't not have a number nine that you're relying upon, even if they're not scoring, at least somebody to like influence the game. And the Fire just don't have that right now. Kasper Schmelko was not on the team sheet. Kai Kamara did not start again, comes off the bench. Kamara's healthy. And Koutsias gets the start. And yeah, like he ends up getting two assists and he did really, really well for himself in some big moments. But then there are also moments where you're still seeing that he's 19 years old and he still has some work to do. So, yes, this is a really good run of form right now. And the schedule is kind in terms of playing against teams that you're fighting for directly. Or you're fighting with directly, I should say. And now you have Toronto, a team that, I mean, my goodness, just 1 point better than Inter Miami. And you can say whatever you want about Inter Miami. But the fact of the matter is that team had six homegrowns on the field to finish out. And I'm not talking about homegrowns who are like 26, 27 years old and who have just been with the team for 8 or 9 years. I'm talking about homegrowns who, like, there was four of them who started and they had a combined 33 starts on the season. Not even a full Major League Soccer slate between the four of them. Guys getting their first MLS goals left and right. And Toronto's just 1 point ahead of them. And I was talking to somebody at the Fire the other day. I was just like, yeah, 4 points, I think, is a must from these two games. I almost think that 6 points is necessary. And I know that those two things might sound similar, But stay with me here. Like, you still dropped so many points at home early on this season. So many. So particularly when you're going up against teams like Montreal and Toronto, teams that theoretically, especially with the way the Montreal's roster is made up right now, with the injuries, with some of the Gold Cup duty and everything like that, they were in a bad way. The Fire needed to beat them and beat them convincingly. And they did. They did exactly what they're supposed to do. 3-0 win at home against a team that's struggling. That's what a playoff team does. Now up against this Toronto team, another team that you have to beat. But this is like one. This is a trap game. I know that that sounds strange for the Fire, who just barely got into a playoff situation for the first time this year. But this is one of those games where you're thinking to yourself, the locker room might be a little bit more laid back. You've won 4 out of 5. You've been keeping clean sheets left and right, and you're playing really well. And then you're welcoming a team that has fired their coach. You know, we all read the Athletic article from Tom Bogert describing all the exploits and vaping and, you know, jealousy and selfishness of some of the guys in the Toronto locker room. You have to go out there and beat them. Have to, because at this point it doesn't matter so much as the quality of the opponent. Obviously that's the case, but like winning the Nashville game, beating Montreal, and then beating Toronto and picking up 9 points when you had home stretches earlier on this season where you really didn't pick up anything. I think 6 points out of these two Canadian teams is necessary if the Fire are truly going to make a push for the postseason. Because you're still looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams right now who theoretically are in the hunt. NYCFC on 26 points, all the way up to DC. Orlando is 4 points clear of DC right now. I think that they're kind of in a category of their own, and they're going to push for, you know, maybe a top 5 or top 4 spot. And this is to say nothing of what Inter Miami is going to look like once the cavalry arrives, because there's going to be a push. If you don't think that that's the case, you're insane. So this is all to say that I think that the performance last night, as we're recording this on a Thursday morning, was just what this group needed. Clean sheet, early goals, getting some guys on the score sheet that haven't been there either all season or in a couple of months, and a Shaqiri golazo. Holy mother of you know what. To be able to hit that ball as it's coming back to you, and Haile Selassie has a great layoff, it's got a little bit of pace behind it. Shaqiri takes a full swing, bringing it back across his body. If Sirois was standing on that side of the goal, I still don't think he saves it. And I thought that I should have known better because it's MLS. I think that that was a shoo-in for goal of the week. I don't think it's going to win, unfortunately. Emmett, there was that wild goal in one game. There was a strike from like the left side of the penalty area. I forget exactly who it was. Keith Costigan was on the call. And the Matt Polster also had a banger.
Was it Miguel Trauco?
That's exactly who it was. That one might be better than Shaq's. So that just tells you how good of a strike that was. Couple of different thoughts on the game. I think that, like we've talked about, first of all, late scratch to the starting 11. Carlos Turan was supposed to start, got hurt during warmups. Gaston Jimenez was not supposed to start. He was battling a groin injury coming off of the Nashville game. And it was going to be Pineda and Fabian Herbers in the midfield and Turan and Chijos as your center backs. Turan gets hurt. We got notified like 10 minutes before kickoff in the middle of our pregame. The ability, and I know I already waxed poetic on Mauricio last episode, but I'm just going to go do it again for a second because I do think that it deserves it. This dude was told probably 2 or 3 days ago that he was going to be playing midfield, somewhere where he hasn't started in the past several weeks. and then just readjusts and has a great game as a center back, because that's what he does. That's not a normal thing. There's not many players in the league who can do that. Thought Miguel Navarro put in another really good shift defensively. I think that this was a game where the wingbacks of Montreal did a decent enough job of creeping up the field and weren't really allowing for those overlapping runs and for fullback play to really be a factor for the Fire. But that's okay, because I think that Guti, Marin, Fabi, Gaston, and Kutsias did a really good job on the break and did a really good job of trying to exploit space, find feet, go out the other way. Kutsias is a brave kid, man. He does not give a flying you know what. He really doesn't. He's running at you, whether it's Campbell, Zach Broguillard, Corbo, Waterman. He's just going downhill. And you have to love that. Even though it doesn't look the cleanest at times, you cannot knock a guy who is being employed as either a number nine or a winger who's willing to take guys on. And I thought that on the Guti goal that the chance had gone, because that touch that he takes back across where he like accidentally megs Campbell, it was an accident, I think. I know it was an accident. But nevertheless, the group is playing at a high level right now. We talked about a collective understanding, I believe, after the Sporting game. And the runs that are being made, Shaq finally starting to get on the same page with these guys and vice versa, right? It's not just on Shaq. It's on the fact that guys need to make runs that they typically wouldn't make because they don't think that the ball is going to be played. The ball will be played. Chris Brady, another clean sheet, couple of big saves. His positioning, his understanding, his communication, it's exponential growth right in front of your eyes. Because if you think that you're watching the same Chris Brady at the beginning of the season as you are now, you're foolish. Foolish. Light years ahead of where he was after he gave up that awful goal to Joaquin Torres in the Philadelphia Union. Just seeing if Emmett is awake over there as I utter the words Philadelphia Union. Don't flex. Come on. It's too early for that. So, and this Montreal team, I actually think that if Kyoto was healthy, which is obviously a big if, and Opoku settles in and they get back Mathieu Chouinard and they have their full complement, I actually do think that they're a playoff team. But lo and behold, that's just simply not the world that we live in right now. So, with all that in mind, could be a pretty epic week at Soldier Field. Not because it was Star Wars night, not because there was multiple tornado warnings, not because you're going to pick up 6 points at the bare minimum from this 3-game homestand in 7 days. Could pick up 9. Pick up 9 points from Nashville, Montreal, and Toronto. Could we potentially see Kai Kamara's 145th? Only time will tell. In other news, U.S. men's national team bounced Panama 5-4 penalties. Jesus Ferreira, late equalizer in the 105th minute. I really didn't get to see much of the game, obviously because we were in the middle of prep and it overlapped with the Fire game. Didn't see penalties. I saw Ferreira's. That was it. I didn't see Roldan's miss. And this was coming, Emmett. I think we can agree on that. This has not been a good tournament. No, I don't care about your 11-goal differential between St. Kitts and Nevis and Trinidad and Tobago. But I think we can confidently say, Emmett, that Panama team deserved to win the game.
That's a consensus everywhere, isn't it? Is that, you know, the first thought is always on the U.S., but then, I don't know, for the first time in a long time, the U.S. have lost, and people have finished with, but Panama deserved it, or the other team deserved it. No one said that in the World Cup when we talked about the Netherlands. Nobody said, yeah, well, the Netherlands deserved it. It was, this is terrible, this isn't good enough. And it seems like that's always the case. And so it's a little, you know, kind of refreshing to see that, you know. And I will say, the people who've watched Panama did warn us. Said this is a good Panamanian team. Adalberto Carrasquilla was balling out.
Baller.
He was on a whole nother level.
And Fire fans don't need to be told that. He balled out at SeatGeek Stadium in the Open Cup.
That's a good midfield, by the way. In Houston.
Which
and
one?
For Panama.
They're deep. They're so deep. You could go Ace Ace and Artur if you're feeling a little defensive. And then if you really want to go the other way, then you go Coco Carrasquilla and Herrera.
Yeah. I mean, and the Panama. I mean, Anibal Godoy has been a force in MLS and with Panama for the past, like, it feels like 10 years.
Yep.
Not actually 10 years.
He's a Gary Smith disciple.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Panama, congrats, U.S. It just, to me, it always looked like, and I had the same feeling watching, was that the U.S. will pull it out eventually. They'll get it eventually. They'll get it on penalties. And it didn't really seem to be the intensity or the, I don't know, that need for that next goal. Maybe I'm missing that, but, you know, just a little, they were just a little off in the final third. A little bit off.
Can I just go ahead and say this? And I know that this is, like, not an excuse, but this is just sort of how I feel. I just don't think that roster was good enough.
Who in that roster makes your Copa America roster next year?
Christian Roldan, Matt Turner. And that's it.
Right, and these are the guys on your
I don't even know. I don't even know if Roldan makes it at this point.
And I know a lot of people don't like Roldan. It's not about that. Apparently, he is the A1 number one locker room guy. Like, he's like, if you have one guy in the U.S.
I know.
System.
And that's why I put him on there. But I'm saying, yeah. Like, and that's why he was at the World Cup. And I should also say Miles Robinson will most likely make it. And potentially Aaron Long.
Neither of whom had great tournaments.
No, but just from a center back standpoint, like, you just need numbers. I was trying to explain to my little sister during the Canada game why we were rolling out our B/C team. Because I don't even know if you could call that our B team, Emmett. You can't. Because if it was the B team, it would be the back end guys from Nations League who didn't play, mixed in with some of the guys that you saw this tournament.
I think that it's fair to say that this is CD team, and we're not even, you know, we're forgetting guys like Mark McKenzie who didn't get called to the Nations League team, right? He's already in preseason. He didn't get to play any games with the U.S. He had a great season with Ghent. We're talking about no Sam Vines. You know, there's a lot of guys out there who've been really good who didn't get a chance to play with either team. Reggie Cannon.
And I understand the thought process and, like, managing guys' mental health and their physical well-being and stuff like that. Like, I get that's needed this time of year, and especially when you're playing two different international tournaments over the summer. Like, I get it. I do. But in the same breath, as I'm talking out of two sides of my mouth, you are a professional footballer. If you want to play for your country, I still think that there are so many guys from that Nations League group and guys that didn't get called in that needed minutes. And I said from the beginning that this was going to feel like a bit of a wasted window with a tournament like the Gold Cup and the roster that we're rolling out there. Like, I don't think that there was really any valuable experience to be had for the likes of Jalen Neal and Cade Cowell. Yeah, they got minutes and they technically got, like, experience under their belt, but I did not like that roster and how much we were just sort of willing to grind through it and not win that tournament. It just didn't sit well with me.
Stock up, stock down. three guys who went up, three who went down.
Turner up. I don't even know how he could go any more up. I think that Ferreira's went up a little bit just because he's showing that he can play multiple positions. Maybe. James Sands, I think, went up. I don't know who else I would put. I don't think, and then stock down. I don't think we have enough time. Any other additions on stock up?
I liked DeJuan Jones.
But even in the Canada game, outside of the assist, I don't think that he had a spectacular game from a possession and distribution standpoint. But no. I don't disagree with you, and I think that defensively, like, he did what he was supposed to do, and you know, but I wouldn't put him as stock up. I think that he showed well for himself.
I don't know. I think if you look in the left back pool and you say, all right, Anthony Robinson's our number one, our number two is some sort of amalgam of a right-footed defender of Scally or Dest. You know, he's our next best left-footed left back, I think, right now. I don't know. The one thing I was thinking about recently is take one player, take a Gio Reyna, Christian Pulisic, and throw it in this team. I think they struggle as well. I think it's another one of those things where, like, nobody was that great, but that's also partially because, one, the team doesn't have any chemistry with each other, and two, the rest of the team isn't that great. So unless you're, like, miles better, it's going to be a lot harder to stand out.
The team doesn't have any chemistry together because they haven't played together, because why would they play together? Because why would we have this group competing in a Gold Cup together? You know what I'm saying? It's like a chicken and the egg thing. Like, yeah, of course they haven't played together, because since when are we starting Jalen Neal, who just started playing professional soccer at first team level this year? He started a quarterfinal in a Gold Cup. And I understand that, like, you can say that there's a pathway for some of these imagine that the U.S. men's national team is a club team, right? And the guys who are playing in the Youth World Cup and showed well in Argentina, like, they made their case, and then they get their opportunity with, quote unquote, the first team, but it's not the first team. It's a bunch of random other MLS and other guys who just were thrown into this roster last second. And I get that, like, Cade Cowell and Jalen Neal, they're like the young homegrown academy guys who are getting their chance with the first team, if we're sticking with this analogy here. This is a Gold Cup. You only get these once. You only get these every other year. There's only one more of these left until the World Cup. And there's Copa America. I understand that. And that's more important for us to show well, and we'll have our first team for that and the whole thing. But Emmett, when you only have so many competitive tournaments and environments like this, I don't see why you're going to have guys when this is not a normal World Cup cycle. This is us hosting the World Cup. This was just an experiment to see if maybe one or two of them could potentially make the case that they deserve to be in a camp with the first team, a competitive tournament. And I'm curious how much influence Greg Berhalter had over this team, if any, and the selection. I don't know, man. I just came away with a really bitter taste in my mouth because people were texting me while the Fire game was going on, and they were just like, U.S. men's national team, exclamation point. And then I went to go see it, and I almost vomited a little bit. And losing in anything other than the final, the Gold Cup, is just not acceptable for me. I don't know how you feel, but, like, it just doesn't do it for me. Other news around Major League Soccer. Leagues Cup right around the corner. All-Star game right around the corner. Emmett's favorite. You're going to be in D.C., by the way?
I'll be there. Not at the All-Star game. Couldn't get in. I'll be at the first training on, Tuesday.
You couldn't get in?
No, I couldn't get in.
They sent us like a commemorative like ticket. I can give you that. It's like it's a fake ticket and it's made out of like fake like carbon. It's cool. It looks cool. I don't know if it definitely won't get you in, but you can have it if that would make you feel better.
But it won't get me in?
No, absolutely not. It's fake.
I mean, this is a bougie affair. This isn't not just anyone can get in. They looked at the list and they said, you can't get in. No way. But I will be in DC and I'll just be standing outside.
Working.
I will be working for it. I'll be standing outside the stadium, just, you know, thinking what it would be like being in the stadium.
You and Julian Carranza.
Ouch.
Too soon. I agree. That was mean. All right. We're going to put a bow on this. I think you guys have heard enough of us for a week. Two episodes in a week. Lucky you guys. Vamos fire, baby. Cooking at the moment. You know something? I am removing cooking with canola from my lexicon and from my arsenal. Because apparently canola oil is just really bad for you. Who knew? So I'm just going to remove it. Don't want to say it anymore. Cooking with vegetable oil or some olive oil or some butter, right? Just a little bit of butter. Nothing crazy. I'm just talking to myself at this point. Everybody, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.